Welcome to In the News for November 10th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin of KSOW LP Radio in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I have four stories for you here today. First one is out of London, written by Ed Johnson of the Associated Press, titled Blair Suffers Major Defeat on Terror Bill. In a political blow to Prime Minister Tony Blair, British lawmakers on Wednesday rejected tough anti-terrorism legislation that would have allowed suspects to be detained for 90 days without charge. The House of Commons vote was the first major defeat of Blair's premiership and raises serious questions about his grip on power. Blair had staked his authority on the measure and doggedly refused to compromise. Lawmakers, including 49 members of Blair's Labour Party, opted instead for a maximum detention period for terror suspects of 28 days without charge. Michael Howard, leader of the opposition Conservative Party, said Blair's authority had, quote, diminished almost to vanishing point, end quote, and said he should consider resigning. Howard continued, quote, this vote shows he is no longer able to carry his own party with him. He must now consider his position, end quote. But Blair was defiant. He ruled out resignation and insisted lawmakers had been wrong to put the civil liberties of a small number of terrorists ahead of the, quote, fundamental civil liberty of this country to protection from terrorism, end quote. He added, quote, the country will think that Parliament has behaved in a deeply irresponsible way today, end quote. Lawmakers voted 322 to 291 against 90-day detentions and backed the 28-day period by 323 to 290 votes. The result is a humiliating blow to Blair. For 8 years, his Labour government commanded an unassailable lead in the Commons and easily swatted aside opposition to its legislation. But Blair's popularity has slumped in the wake of the divisive Iraq War, and his party was punished in national elections earlier this year. Labour's huge 161-seat advantage in the Commons shrunk to just 66, making the government vulnerable. In the immediate aftermath of the July attacks on London's transit system, Blair had considerable cross-party support for new anti-terror legislation. He drafted the Terrorism Bill, which aims to tackle Muslim extremism by outlawing training in terrorist camps as well as encouraging acts of violence and glorifying terrorism. But the political consensus broke down over the plan to extend the period terrorist suspects can be held without charge from the current 14-day maximum to 3 months. Authorities argued more time was needed in complex cases where suspects have multiple aliases or where the help of foreign intelligence agencies is needed. But critics countered that extending it to 90 days would erode civil rights. Blair took a considerable political gamble in refusing to back down and had called in every supporter to shore up numbers. Treasury Chief Gordon Brown was called back from an official visit to Israel only 2 hours after arriving there. Foreign Secretary Jack Straw cut short an official EU visit to Russia, while Labour Party Chairman Ian McCartney, who is recuperating from heart surgery, volunteered to return for the vote. The defeat comes at a difficult time for the Prime Minister. His party, and even his cabinet, is split over his plans to encourage greater private sector investment in public services such as healthcare and education. Earlier this month, Blair's strongest ally, Work and Pension Secretary David Blunkett, was forced to resign due to a scandal over his business dealings. Prime Minister has said he will not seek a fourth term in office. He could serve until 2010, but pressure for him to quit sooner may intensify following Wednesday's vote. Bookmakers Ladbrokes cut the odds on Blair stepping down next year from 11-4 to 5-2 in the wake of the defeat. Scottish Nationalist Party leader Alex Salmond said, quote, the Prime Minister has just fallen off the high wire. He's a victim of his own arrogance. He may well be on the way out of office. Next up from the New Standard at newstandardnews.com, written by staff writer Brendan Coyne. Supreme Court sides with workers in wage case. The first workers' rights ruling of the John Roberts era, the Supreme Court on Wednesday found that employers must pay workers for the time it takes them to don protective gear and travel to their workstations. The unanimous decision upheld one lower court ruling and partially overturned another, while finding that employers could deny pay for time spent waiting for protective equipment and uniforms. The decision consolidated two cases, IBP versus Alvarez and Tum versus Barber Foods, dealing with company policies denying compensation to employees for transit time after workers put on the required safety gear. Last year, two federal courts reached separate conclusions on the issue, with an East Coast court finding in favor of the employer, Barber Foods, and a court on the West Coast finding for workers in the IBP case. Writing for the Supreme Court, Justice John Paul Stevens said, quote, We hold that any activity that is integral and indispensable to a principal activity is itself a principal activity. The ruling holds that employers must pay employees for work-related activities carried out during a continuous workday, but since waiting for equipment or other supplies is two steps removed from work activities, companies do not have to pay for that time. In a statement yesterday, United Food and Commercial Workers, UFCW President Joe Hansen applauded the ruling. The union represents workers with IBP. Hansen said, quote, "Today, the United States Supreme Court affirmed the position long held by workers and the UCFW. The UFCW has advocated for decades that all required time is paid time." Next story also from the New Standard, also written by Brendan Coyne. Santa Cruz okays city-run medical marijuana distribution. The City Council of Santa Cruz, California, on Tuesday passed for the second time an ordinance paving the way for the nation's first ever government-run medical marijuana distribution program. A portion of the ordinance would hold off enactment until federal courts resolve current cases dealing with the issue. Under the measure, the Santa Cruz city government will set up an Office of Compassionate Use that will handle procuring and storing marijuana and dispense it to, quote, qualified patients, end quote, under California's nearly 10-year-old Compassionate Use Act. A council-appointed five-person board made up of at least two approved medical marijuana users or caregivers and two medical professionals will oversee the office's actions and report back to the council. Applauding the impending passage of the law in a statement yesterday, the American Civil Liberties Union noted that the program could provide patients and medical marijuana providers a shield from federal prosecution. The ACLU actively supports medical marijuana laws across the country. In Raich v. Gonzalez this summer, the Supreme Court found that the federal government has the power under the Constitution's Commerce Clause to prosecute users and providers of marijuana, even in states that have legalized the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes. No prosecutions have been sought under that ruling, but the ACLU says Santa Cruz's move represents a direct challenge to the law by testing states' constitutional right to opt out of enforcing the federal government's medical marijuana prohibition scheme. In a recently written legal opinion, California Attorney General Bill Lockyer said, quote, "The federal government cannot enforce federal criminal laws against state officials who merely implement valid state law or choose not to enforce federal law," end quote. Santa Cruz is currently the plaintiff in a lawsuit seeking protection from federal law enforcement actions related to medical marijuana. And finally, another story from the News Standard at newsstandardnews.com, also written by Brendan Coyne, dated November 9th. Texas, Maine voters choose differently on gay rights. Gay rights measures in Texas and Maine met different results at the polls yesterday. Texans overwhelmingly passed a ban on both gay marriage and civil unions, while in Maine it appears state voters approved earlier legislation protecting lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people from housing, employment, credit, and education discrimination. In Texas, voters approved a constitutional amendment barring the state from recognizing same-sex marriages and civil unions by a 3-1 margin, according to early results reported by the Secretary of State's office. The measure prohibits any Texas government body from, quote, creating or recognizing any legal status identical or similar to marriage, end quote. Texas law already bars gay marriage and the recognition of such legal couplings conducted in other jurisdictions. The American Friends Civil Liberties Union of Texas noted, the group maintains that the amendment violates the state Bill of Rights. Human Rights Campaign, an advocacy group for lesbian, gay, bi, and transgender rights, considered both the Maine and Texas ballot measures, quote, critical, end quote. Human Rights Campaign President Joe Salmoniz told the Associated Press last night, quote, "The fight for fairness isn't over and we don't give up. These amendments are part of a long-standing effort by the extreme right to eliminate any legal recognition for gay people and our families," end quote. In Maine, according to numbers compiled by the Bangor Daily News, voters turned down Referendum Question 1, which was put on the ballot by two conservative Christian organizations and would have overturned an anti-discrimination law passed earlier this year. That has been In the News. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next time.